This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Now, live from the Malamut & Associates Law Studios, the revolution will be broadcast. This is the next generation of talk. Now, the Rich Cioli Show podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
There was another horrific crime that took place in this country 50 years ago. The murder of Sharon Tate and her friends and the LoBianco couple, too. Do you remember that? The Manson family?
Well, we've heard about it, and we've heard about the new movie coming out.
Did you see it?
I did not see it yet.
I did.
You did.
Yeah, I did. I did. It's called Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's Quentin Tarantino. I love Tarantino. I didn't love this movie, but I'm not going to get into details because I want people should see it. It was enjoyable. It's definitely worth going to see, but I don't think it's his best, but I did enjoy it. But you know that after the Manson, I found this fascinating. So I'm reading the book now, Helter Skelter, by the prosecutor who put him away. After the Manson murders, because this made me think of it when you said copycat killers, there were, after that, a whole bunch of copycat killings, crimes that took place around Los Angeles after that happened. Isn't that something?
I believe it.
People didn't know, they didn't know it was the Manson family yet, obviously, so they talked about this in the fact that when that summer happened, they said it took 4 months before Manson's name made headlines, and the city was gripped with fear of additional copycat killers all that summer, so much so that Los Angeles Magazine, blaming the age of freaky crime on what happened in 1969 when that happened. So this is amazing here. Before Charles Manson became, the big name in all of this, the first story Los Angeles Magazine did on the crime tried to wrap in drugs, youth culture, Woodstock, the Black Panthers, and Rosemary's Baby into the same package to try to say that this was it was the summer of freaky crimes. And they put all that in there. It's interesting, right? Because they still kind of do the same thing today, right? You see, people blame games and movies and drugs and all the other things that they blame.
Yeah.
Kind of happens that way.
I heard on the one talk show or news show was saying Call of Duty, which I let them play that video game. We supervise, but they're blaming the video games. But I will say in newsrooms, that's why we don't cover suicides. I mean, unless it's somebody very, very famous.
Good.
Because it's proven that when you cover a suicide, it emboldens other people that are mentally, they're going through some mental health issues.
Sure.
So I wonder if, this copycat type situation, why don't news organizations have some self-discipline on cover? I mean, all you saw all weekend was, massive coverage, wall-to-wall coverage of this.
They make these people into almost...
They
glorify them. Whether it's Charles Manson or whether it's a shooter in Texas, they glorify them. And then if you are a nutball... A nut job. You look at that and you go, I want that too. And then all of a sudden, you could do something.
It emboldens them. And that's proven for suicide.
Yeah, the guy who you're mentioning was a Fox News host, John Scott, who tried to link video games to the mass shootings. This annoys the hell out of me because, to your point, your kids play those games and they're not shooting anybody. I grew up playing games like that. I never clubbed an Italian guy over the head just because I played Super Mario Brothers. Maybe I should have.
You should have, definitely.
And I grew up watching Rambo, First Blood, all those movies, and very violent movies.
Predator, Commando. All the Arnold Schwarzenegger movies that, there was a body count of 800.
Within the opening, there's like the opening with the credits over it. Take a listen to what the Fox News host John Scott said.
I wonder if these guys who very often are raised on a diet of violent video games, if they actually start pulling the trigger of a real weapon and they see real death and they find that it's not as satisfying as maybe it was when they're playing it on a television screen. Have you ever encountered that? And could that be the reason that this guy just finally stopped?
Well, I've encountered video game players and their activity, but it's rare that individuals act out like this that are video gamers. I think it's a little too early to speculate at this stage about the motive. But what we do know is that this guy got a hold to a gun.
Thanks, Rick. So this was attorney Ted Williams who responded and said it's too early to speculate. Reason.com, Ron Bailey, the science editor, has written regularly how studies continue to show there's no relationship between video game violence and real world aggression. There's no correlation to that. And thank God there isn't, by the way, because otherwise we'd have millions of killers on the streets. Millions. Because how many kids play those games and watch the movies?
Tons of kids. But I think part of it, nobody wants to talk. They want to blame a video game or whatever. But it has to do with somebody's, you know, your parents. You should, as a parent, you should monitor that. You should talk to your kids about it. I hate them. I hate the video games, but I let them play them because they're just going to go to somebody else's house and play them.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
And you have a very important rule in the house, which is?
When you're playing a multiplayer, you're not allowed to kill your brother.
Don't kill your brother.
Don't kill your brother.
See, and
that's my only rule.
If every family would just have the common sense to teach that, we'd be such a better country, would we not? It turns out, you know, after the Manson thing, 50 years ago, isn't that crazy? 50 years ago, people were double checking their deadbolts. They say here in Los Angeles Magazine, they wrote back then that there were people who were going to be going around with the demon marijuana. And if you smell the demon marijuana, get away because they're probably going to be a serial killer. The new violence and age of freaky crime. It was October 1969. Wow. They wrote this before they even realized now what was going on with Manson and everything else. But they talked about it was a culture of rich hippies and ritual murder and all this other stuff. I think probably there was no way Charles Manson could have lived a normal life. That guy was as crazy as you get, right? Yeah, evil, crazy.
Yeah.
The intersection of evil and crazy. It's a good movie. I would say this, though. My favorite part of the movie actually wasn't even about any crime or anything. Quentin Tarantino did something amazing. He took this radio station that was on, maybe it still is in Los Angeles, I don't know. Is it still on the air?
I don't think so.
It was kind of the big station in the 60s, right? They would play all the music. And he designed the movie to have the songs, but also the actual commercials from then. So they took hours and hours of actual airtime from the station from 1969, including live reads by radio hosts. So what we do is when I read a live read or Dawn reads a live read, that's what you call an endorsement. And he actually kept some of those endorsements in the movie and then on the soundtrack too, which is pretty cool, I thought. Here's an example. Take a listen to one.
Heaven Sent fragrance by Helena Rubinstein. Spray it on and heavenly things happen. Heaven Sent.
Yeah.
Splash in it. Laugh in it. Live in it. Love in it. You'll find Heaven Sent fragrance at Helena Rubinstein counters everywhere. Suddenly, you are all the
things that you want to be. I love the jingles.
We need to bring these back.
Yeah. We need some Zioli jingles.
We need jingles, right?
But you know that heavenly scent might help you if you get sprayed with that skunk that's in your yard.
Oh, yes.
You know?
You're right. That might be what I need. If you get skunk sprayed, you use heavenly scent. Hey, do you have the Tanya tanning butter one?
I do.
Okay, this is my favorite. So this guy now, this is a DJ back in 1969 who's doing a literal live read. So what happens is that you're given copy of the product that you're supposed to endorse. And then they tell you, you know, kind of improvise and wing it a little bit and put in a personal story. Think of something you can relate to, that sort of thing. Well, this guy's clearly not the target demo of Tanya tanning butter, but his live read is great. Take a listen.
You might even burn a little bit.
We'll go back. It's the middle of it.
That's
not the whole thing. So we'll get it later for the show. But it's great. I'll play that for you as well. Do we have another one?
We have the jingles from 93, the Boss DJ, the Boss radio station here.
Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
KHJ Los Angeles.
Is that great?
Big 93.
Hello, this is the real Don Steele. Join me on Boss Radio from 3 to 6 p.m.
The real Don Steele, 93 KHJ.
It sounds
Los
like
Angeles weather.
1 year ago today.
KHJ, Boss Hitbound.
Hi, this is Humble Harv. Join me on Boss Radio from 6 to 9 p.m.
Love it.
Humble Harv. 93KHJ.
The year, 1967. The month, December.
Merry Christmas from 93KHJ.
So positive and optimistic, right?
The greatest hits of 1967. In order, the big 93KHJ
Los Angeles. Have a happy new year with Boss Radio.
Hi, this is Robert W.
All right, thank you. I think we should do more of those for this show, don't you think?
Zioli's show.
Zioli's show
they
news?
They all had names almost like mobsters. So what would Zioli say?
You know well, Nikki G on WOGL still sounds like
a
mobster.
Right. Yeah,
I mean, if you
true.
Listen to him, you think you are listening to a mobster. Hey, it's Nikki G. How you doing? But that we got to do a jingle for the news. Like Zioli show news and then have the news with Dawn and do some jingles with that. That could be good, I think.
That could be fun.
I don't know. Just throwing it out there.
They actually had, back in the day, they actually had like an orchestra like that would actually... You know, in a studio that would produce all of that. So I don't even know how you do stuff like that anymore. You know what I mean?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So they had actual musicians.
They had actual musicians in there doing these jingles, you know, around live reads, around, you know. It was
That's
a whole
awesome.
Big production.
Huh. You know, after the Manson murders happened, the people used to, there were so many calls to the police back then of people who thought they saw freaky killers on the streets who were coming after them. It was a huge thing the LAPD had to deal with back then. They said that, put it this way, he said, he was working for homicide in the early 40s. There were about 70 murders a year. Now they're over 400. In those days, 90% of the murders he investigated were solved within a year. The procedure was fairly simple. You used to check out a victim's family, friends, and associates, find someone with a motive for killing him, and in most cases, you have a killer. But they wrote back then, today police are reluctant to divulge the proportion of solved to unsolved murders, but they admit it, nothing like 90%. The problem is that many of today's murders seem senseless. And that's what they said because they didn't understand, maybe see the Manson thing, you know? That wasn't actually senseless. He was crazy, but remember his whole plan was to start a race war.
Yes.
That was the Helter Skelter from the Beatles album. He would start a race war because they would blame it on black people coming to the canyon to kill this white actress. But really, he was a bitter guy who didn't get a record contract and thought that the guy who didn't give him the contract still lived there. And so... But that's amazing, right? They thought it was just a senseless random thing. And I'm sure there are things like that, but even Manson knew the victim. He knew the house. He went there. He hung out there. He knew. So that's usually these things are connected. I think it's probably why when there's shootings like this, it's so hard to understand because you go, it doesn't make any sense. You can't even grapple and understand it.
Yeah.
How people can be this gonzo nuts, you know?
Yeah, it's scary.
It is scary. And then copycats, to your point, happens. And so they actually wrote, for many, liberals and intellectuals have believed and preached that crime was the fruit of ignorance, poverty, and social injustice. They're writing this after the Sharon Tate murders, before they really understood the Manson family, trying to figure out the social component of this. Like, could you imagine if there was a way to analyze what drove Squiggy Frome to try to kill President Gerald Ford, that nutbag?
Right.
They let her out of prison. Can you believe that?
No, I can't.
I don't get that. And that guy, Charles Tex Watson, who's going to die in prison, he's got to serve a long, long time. But he did the old, I became a minister and found Jesus routine.
Yep.
So now let me out.
Yep.
No. You should have found Jesus on the way in, pal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm happy you found your Jesus, but now you pay.
You found him, and now you got him in jail with you.
Right. And Rome gets its due, and then, you know, we'll see how the afterworld treats you. But
he was really Manson obviously was the mastermind, but he was really the mastermind behind those two killings.
He was the one who actually did the killings.
Yeah.
So, and there's all these freaks who, they really kind of show that whole group of cultists who used to hang out at that ranch in California. It was an old stunt ranch. And I'll say this, though. Brad Pitt is a great actor. I know guys who look like him, like me, we sometimes people don't think we're that good. But
it's tough.
It's tough but he's really good, you know?
Yeah, you and Brad, I mean, your talents sometimes seem to be overshadowed by your looks,
Thank you, Greg. Yeah. That's what I struggle with. The struggle's real, all right? Oh, and speaking of the skunk, I got an email from my buddy Mike Allen from Termagard. He said, we're on it. They're
going to
take care of the skunk for me. Yeah, that's good. That's good.
They're not going to kill the little skunk.
No, they're going to take him to Skunk Land. It's a little amusement park for skunks and let them run around.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
Don, would you agree that the media coverage of Charles Manson over the years has been, in some ways you'd say, a little bit over the top, perhaps?
Yes.
Yeah.
Agreed.
50 years ago today.
50 years ago. And we still call them the Manson murders. So we glorify right. the killer, but we don't say the Sharon Tate murders or the, you know, we don't talk about the victims.
So it's funny you say that. I actually today tried to use the term the Tate-LaBianca murders, especially because Charlie Manson did not kill them. He killed other people, but there were his other followers. Members of his cult that killed them. It's funny, right? Yesterday, I got into that story from NPR about how violence is a contagion and that the people who do these things, they're looking for the attention and the accolades that they receive from the mass saturation of media coverage over these killings. That's what ultimately these social psychologists have concluded. Again, these are not conservatives who've concluded this to try to get guns off the hook. This was a study that was done by social psychologists at universities who have said there's a pattern here and it's like a contagion. And there's a 2-week window where other wannabes start doing the same thing. This is all according to scientific research from Arizona State University. They've been going back and analyzing stuff going all the way back from the 90s. This woman, Sherry Towers. And by the way, she also wants gun control. It's not like she's not a gun control person. She is. But her point is that what we found for these mass killings, these high profile mass killings, where there's at least 4 people killed, there was significant evidence of contagion. We also found significant evidence of contagion in school shootings because it spreads. One person sees the coverage and then they want to outdo the person who went before them. And she literally says here, and the research shows that the intensive media coverage seems to drive the contagion. The Manson murder is the first really true, you could say, mass murder of our time, of which it receives so much coverage.
Yes, it's true.
Life magazine, news specials, all the other things that went with it, right?
And what's interesting to me, and that if people haven't heard your take on that study, it's a great podcast, but from yesterday. But the thing is, I don't hear anybody else except Zeoli saying this and going through this study. And there's another study that just came out that was in the LA Times that went back all the way from the 1960s. So these social scientists now are talking, thank goodness, because maybe they'll come up with some answers. But you're the only one talking about it.
Yeah, and we've talked about copycats too. And think about how many copycat Manson people there were after the Manson killings,
yes.
right? After the Tate-LaBianca murders. I mean, there were people that wanted to be the next Charlie Manson. They weren't as smart as him. They couldn't get people to follow them, so they wound up trying to do things themselves. And it didn't become a thing, but they tried. And a big part of that is how much attention was given to these murders. And you could understand why. Obviously, it was a horrific, horrific, gruesome scene. But when they announced the suspects and then the trial, the coverage of the trial, remember that?
Yes.
That trial coverage was unbelievable with all the Manson girls standing outside doing their little seances for Charlie. They were not going to leave the courthouse until he was free.
And think about it. Think about even my kids have seen that. Think about how that goes viral and it's seen over and over and over. So even though it happened 50 years ago.
Right. A 30,000-word Rolling Stone article about Charles Manson titled The Most Incredible Story of the Most Dangerous Man Alive. And he's been on, and Charles Manson has been on the cover of magazines as if treated like a celebrity,
yes.
like a hero or something like that.
He was actually, like, growing up, he was actually a cult figure because I remember Axl Rose and Guns N' Roses and stuff, like wearing his shirts and covering his songs.
That's
and,
right.
And he was always this mythical figure, and you know, Marilyn Manson named his, you know, himself after him. Like this whole,
he did,
yeah,
really.
Yep, Marilyn Manson, like that name comes from Marilyn Monroe and Charles Manson.
Are you sure about that? Right, I don't want to get you sued. No, joke, not funny. All right,
that's just messed up, though.
No, it is messed up. And then that house became a tourist attraction, the house where the murders took place on Cielo Drive. So now you look at the media coverage today of these shooters and you tie it into this study that was done. And obviously we have not learned our lesson here. The conclusion from the researchers when they look at these mass killings, and they don't just use shootings, they use mass killings, is that you find people who are depressed, who are highly suicidal, They are loners. They're losers in their life. Obviously, they're not successful here. Quote, it's a form of social contagion. That's when a high-profile suicide leads to more people to take their own lives. This is also documented in terms of that. Robin Williams' suicide let other people take their own lives because maybe they felt it was okay. Maybe they felt they would get some attention for themselves. Interviewing living mass shooters in prison and people who knew such perpetrators and has found that these individuals often start out feeling suicidal. We can show about 80% were actively suicidal prior to the shootings. And the vast majority of people who are suicidal don't attack others, but there is seem to be a pattern with these people. And what they look at is this mix of severe depression and anguish and desperation. And then here you go. Now you get front page magazine stories, your dossiers out there, your manifestos out there. Suddenly now, when you've been wanting notoriety your whole life and maybe you've been bullied and picked on, now you're treated like a celebrity. And that's very appealing to a lot of these people.
So I wonder what if the media could get together and say, they have to report something. It's going to go viral
right
anyway. But what if everybody agreed they're not going to name the suspect's name or focus, you know, they'll focus on the situation and the tragedy and the victims, but not the shooter.
But not the shooter or the killer. Right. When this happened, Ivor Davis, who was coming on at 6:30, he said that his bureau back in England, United Kingdom, they said, this is now the story. Drop everything you're doing. And he kept sending them stories and stories. So it was international news, the Manson killings, international news. They kept sending it over, and it's all they wanted to do, all they wanted to cover, Los Angeles Times, everywhere. And then do you remember the years after 60 Minutes got in on the act in 2020,
yes.
48 Hours, they would sit down with all the wackos in the Manson family and they'd interview them and try to learn from them. I remember watching the one video in 1976 with Susan Atkins, who was one of the killers, who was talking about how she had no remorse whatsoever for Sharon Tate, who begged for her baby's life. And she said, look, you bee, I don't care about you. And that kind of coverage of these people, you could argue, is a little bit grotesque.
Yes.
At the very least, right? But then if there's somebody out there who wants that kind of attention and they know all they have to do is kill somebody and they can get on national TV and be famous, I imagine if you are a very, very dark person in a very dark place, that's probably got to be appealing. I mean, that's what the science says. It's appealing to these people. I don't know. I mean, to your point, Dawn, you're not going to be able to ever really stop that because they have to report on it. Their names are going to get out there. The internet, social media. We have less ways to contain it now than ever before. But back then, we had more ways to contain it, and they didn't want to contain it. They wanted to get ratings off this. They wanted to sell newspapers off this and magazines and everything else, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the only thing that can, I think, drive it is that, you know, listeners and viewers write, email, call into whatever media they disapprove of and say, stop glorifying these perpetrators.
Yeah.
And that's the marketplace could decide. I mean, the ratings are already falling, which is why I think they're becoming more and more desperate.
The problem with the internet now is that these people know that their manifestos will get on the internet and can be read by millions of people around the world. And that's another problem too, is that they'll be hosted on sites that will put them on there. I don't know what you do about that.
Yeah, I mean, can the government say you can't publish it? I mean, I don't know.
I doubt it. Remember the New York Times case about the how to make an atomic bomb? How to make an atom bomb case where they said you're allowed to publish that stuff. So I doubt it. It would probably be a violation of the First Amendment. And for a lot of these people that are growing up now, the internet, they probably don't even watch TV news. So getting on TV news isn't anything, but being an internet sensation for them is probably more than anything,
sick,
I would imagine.
And
yes, Greg.
Even with the Columbine kids used the Anarchist Cookbook in the 90s, which wasn't an internet thing. It was an actual book, but it taught you how to make, you know, explosives and all that stuff. So it's not just the internet. I mean, there's dark, you know, the forces everywhere.
But kids today don't read books, right? So probably
true.
For them,
no, it's true.
Having 80 million people read your thing on 8chan is probably what they're going for, right?
Way better.
Right.
Look at how many
better.
Clicks I got, or how many likes I got, or how many other people said you're a hero to me, or something. That to them probably means a whole lot more than getting on to 2020 or 60 Minutes. They probably have no idea those shows are even on.
Exactly.
Right. These people in their 20s who do this stuff, I can't imagine they even know there's a nightly news show.
True.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong here. It seems, but times have changed. I think they want to be internet sensations.
Yeah.
The first time I saw Charles Manson was 1994 on a 2020 Diane Sawyer special.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was with him and with all, you know, with all of his women followers. And it was fascinating TV, but that was the first time I saw him was on 60 Minutes, to your point.
But think about that. Somebody had to allow that jailhouse interview.
Yes.
And you still remember it. It was so vivid to you. But why, you know, in other words, that's up to governors and, you know what I mean? That's up to the government to say yes, well, or a warden. So what if they say, no, we're not going to allow these jailhouse interviews?
Then he sues and says, I have a First Amendment right to talk to the press, wins, and then they get to talk to him.
Yep.
Well,
I mean, that's what happens.
In Pennsylvania, that's why we don't have many of these, because we have laws that prohibit that.
Charlie Manson, still in our nation's ethos.
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
It's weird.
And then how many other lunatics wanted to just be like Manson?
100%.
Wanted to be like him. Yep. That aspect of that, because I'm convinced these are all essentially now copycats of somebody else. Like, none of these shooters or killers are creative. They're all following somebody else. They all want to be like somebody else. They're not exactly on the cutting edge of new killing technology or new, you know what I mean? And I think these people are all just giant chains, strains of copycats.
Yep.
It seems to me.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Thanks for taking the Zeoli Show with you. Rich Zeoli, weekday mornings on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Today, of course, is the 50th anniversary of the Tate LoBianco murders, and there is a book out, Manson Exposed, a reporter's 50-year journey into madness and murder. And I want to welcome to the program the author of that book, Ivor Davis. Mr. Davis, you have covered this case from day one, longer than any other journalist ever covered the Manson murders.
That's correct, because I was there from day one, and I'm still here. I mean, I've covered it from the beginning, through the trial, through the parole hearings, through interviewing everybody, through the ridiculousness of what's happened and how it's stayed in our memories.
And obviously, 50 years, we're talking about it again, not only because of the 50th anniversary, but also Quentin Tarantino's new movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which I saw it, I enjoyed it. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but it's not a documentary. It's not a true story. I mean, the name is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's not telling the true story of what actually happened.
You're absolutely right, Richard. Once Upon a Time, it's a fairy story, but it's a grim fairy story. It's a funny fairy story. And it's not the truth. And to be honest with you, if you want the truth, then you should read my book.
Let's talk about the truth here, because from my perspective, I'll just tell you from a layman's perspective of not knowing much, what I heard was that Charles Manson and his cult followers did these murders because they wanted to start a race war known as Helter Skelter.
That was the story, and believe it or not, the prosecutor, Vince Bugliosi, actually said that to the jury, and the jury believed it. But in my opinion, that wasn't the real reason. The Beatles were not to blame for inciting any kind of murder or any kind of race war. I mean, it was just crazy, but it didn't happen that way.
So what was the real reason then that Charles Manson told the killers, and go through that if you would, who actually did the killing that night with Sharon Tate and her friends?
Well, what happened was on August the 9th, 1969, Charles Tex Watson was sent out from the Spahn movie ranch where the Manson family lived, and with Tex Watson was Susan Atkins and also Patricia Krenwinkel. Now, and then Linda Kasabian was driving, but Linda Kasabian did not take part in the murders. So they all got to Cielo Drive, which is the very posh neighborhood of Beverly Hills. They cut the telephone wire, they climbed over, and they brutally murdered everybody there, including the very gorgeous and 8 months pregnant actress Sharon Tate and four other people. The other people were her friends, J.C. Bring, the celebrity hairdresser, who was a pal and a former boyfriend of Sharon, Wojtek Frykowski, who was a Polish friend of Sharon's husband, Roman Polanski, and Frykowski's girlfriend, who was the Gibby Abigail Folger, who was the heir to the coffee fortune, and one other poor guy, an 18-year-old guy called Stephen Perrin, who was in a car in the wrong place at the wrong time.
When I watched the movie, have you seen it, by the way, Once Upon a Time?
I have seen it. Okay. I have seen it. I thought it was engrossing. I thought it captured 1969 perfectly, the music and the performances by Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio, I thought were terrific. What did you think?
I agree with you, and I thought that Margot Robbie's performance was amazing as Sharon Tate.
She was Sharon Tate. She was a doll. She was a little bit Barbie doll. She was a sweet, innocent young actress, and that was the way she was back then, because I had interviewed her a year before she was murdered when she was on the movie Valley of the Dolls. So that was the way she was. And in fact, well, as I say, I don't want to go too much into the film, and neither do you, but she's perfect as Sharon.
The book is called Manson Exposed, A Reporter's 50-Year Journey into Madness and Murder. And Ivor Davis is with me. He's the author. He's covered this from day one, still covering the horrific Manson murders 50 years ago today. The LaBianco murders are something that don't get as much attention. They weren't even mentioned in the movie. But here's this nice Italian couple minding their own business. And what happened to them?
The next day, Charles Manson, after not being too happy with the mess that his acolytes had made at the Sharon Tate house, said, "I'm going to take you along to a house, and I'm going to show you how to do it." Well, to be honest with you, it was a totally random choice, the LaBiancas. The only knowledge that Manson knew was that he'd been to parties at a friend's house three doors away from the LaBiancas, so he knew the area. And when he got to the house, he got out. He went in, he tied up the LaBiancas and told them, "Don't worry, I'm not going to hurt you." He came out and he told Leslie Van Houten, he told Krenwinkel, and he told Charles Tex Watson to go into the house. "You know what to do, kill them, leave messages." And they went in and they committed this series of terrible murders. Manson drove off and the murderers hitchhiked back to the movie Spahn Ranch in Chatsworth, California. I mean, it's a bit crazy, isn't it?
It's very crazy, and it seems there's so much craziness around them. I mean, one of the followers, who was probably one of the scariest in the movie, by the way, the Tarantino movie, Squeaky Fromm, who would later try to assassinate President Gerald Ford.
Yes, and before she tried to assassinate Gerald Ford, she actually met me in the courtroom, just outside the courtroom, on the first day of the trial, and she knew that I was not pro-Manson. She knew I'd written a very quick book about the Manson family's madness, and she sweetly came up to me and said, "Hey, Ivor, do you know what it feels like to have a sharp knife slipped down your throat?"
No.
Well, to be honest with you, it was a threat, and I rushed home. I told my wife to leave the house with my one-year-old daughter, and they stayed somewhere else, because the Manson family, who were not in jail, were still capable of violence. I knew it, and in fact, they did do violent things to people, but they weren't in jail. That was my association with Squeaky, who, as you said, is in the film. And by the way, I must tell you this, the Spahn Ranch, where I spent 3 days talking to Manson family members, was brilliantly captured by Tarantino in the film. Isn't it an eerie sort of Village of the Damned place?
Yeah. Well said. The Village of the Damned, and it seemed so what you'd expect where the Manson family would live. It was almost perfect in the sense of, I didn't know that. I watched it and I went, that makes perfect sense. And I looked at pictures online, and boy, he really nailed it in terms of his portrayal.
He did. I mean, didn't you think? I mean, it was creepy, wasn't it? I mean, when the character, one of the lead characters, goes to the ranch. Oh my God. you shudder a bit with almost horror.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. You're just waiting for something to happen. And also the scene at the beginning of the movie where the Manson girls are walking around, they're going through garbage, and they're all singing that creepy song that Charles Manson actually wrote in real life.
Yes, I mean, I think it was called Cease to Exist or something like that, and they changed, and he gave it to Dennis Wilson of the Beach Boys, who was a pal of Manson. And Dennis Wilson of the Beach Boys took that song and changed the name and never gave Charles Manson credit. But yes, what I learned, and you saw it, was they got food by diving in dumpsters at supermarkets to get food that had been thrown away, and they ate very well that way. And in the movie, it depicts that exceptionally well of them. It sounds awful, but they got good food and they ate well, believe it or not.
It is insane. And the fact that Manson was a singer, not something people realize, and that's kind of the reason why these murders happened, right? There's a connection with all this, with Charles Manson being the failed, aspiring performance artist.
Well, you know, I was thinking about it this week because I've been thinking about it a lot. And here's the truth, and here's what I think. I think that if Charles Manson had become a rock and roll star as he so desperately wanted to be, there would never be any murders. He would have been a bit happy to be adopted by the rock and roll crowd. But the real reason, and I didn't answer it for you, the real reason, in my opinion, that Charles Manson sent out his killers on those two nights in August 1969 was he wanted to cover up on a different murder that happened July 27th, 1969, which was done by a friend of his called Bobby Beausoleil. And Bobby Beausoleil was a musician, and Bobby Beausoleil stupidly got himself arrested for the murder of Gary Hinman, a musician in Topanga Canyon, California, in July, and was facing the death penalty. And Manson, who'd sent him to kill Hinman, felt guilty. So Manson, I know it sounds weird, Manson then sent out the family members to kill on those two nights to make it look like that the killers were still at large, and the cops would come along, see what happened, and say, hey, Bobby Beausoleil is in prison, but he's the wrong guy. We'll let him go out. We'll set him free. And that was Manson's bizarre thinking in a warped mind.
It's amazing. The book is Manson Exposed, a reporter's 50-year journey into madness and murder. Ivor's with me. Ivor's the author, and he's been following this, Ivor Davis, since the day it happened 50 years ago today. The house itself, I remember when I was a kid, my dad took me and my brother to Los Angeles, and that was one of the stops. You know, you had to kind of see the house. But it's gone now, and it's had a series of owners over the years. Trent Reznor used to live there.
Trent Reznor had a recording studio there, would you believe? But as you said, I'm sorry to interrupt you, I don't mean to, but you're exactly right. What happened was the new owner bought it and he tore the place down, built a completely new house because, I mean, the house was of memories, of horrible memories, a completely new house, and they changed the address of the house.
So it's no longer the, 10,050 was the address,
yeah.
Right?
Yes, correct, yes. No longer that number, I forget what the number is, but it's...
Because it was probably a tourist attraction, right? People would probably go there to see it all the time.
Oh, my God. Listen, I mean, you said you drove by. I mean, every day it used to draw hundreds of visitors, and the street didn't like it. And then, of course, there's a tour company called Dearly Departed that takes people every day past the house. So, even though the number has been changed and the house is different, tourists still love to see the scene of this carnage.
Why did Warren Beatty, actor Warren Beatty, turn down the offer to live in the house?
Well, here's what happened. Roman moved into this large house. Roman Polanski was the husband of Sharon Tate, and who was in London at the time of his pregnant wife's murder. They were very close, and Warren lived in the penthouse at the Beverly Regent Hotel in Beverly Hills. They were very close, and Warren was asked if he would like to share the house. Now, Warren, to be honest with you, had many romances, and I think that was really the reason that he decided he would not get the privacy. But he walked through the house and he said, Roman, thanks very much indeed, but you know, I think it's a great house, but I think I'm going to stay where I am in my penthouse in the hotel. So, because he wanted Warren to move into the house, but Warren said, luckily, no.
Amazing. And were the, I mean, that guy, Charles Tex Watson, chilling, and the creepy women who were there that night, it seems like Charles Manson gets all the attention, obviously, over the years, and he's the one who, in culture and everything else, is the one you remember. But man, I mean, Ivor, these people who did the killings for him, these are some very, very, very evil people, am I right?
Yes, I mean, Susan Atkins, I mean, a lot of them, the ones in jail now, like Leslie Van Houten, who wasn't involved in the Sharon Tate case, and Patricia Krenwinkel, have all become model prisoners, perfect prisoners. They want parole. They've been denied all along, and they will probably be denied for the rest of their lives. But Charles Tex Watson was a young, handsome movie star looked like a movie star actor. But he went out, and he was the most savage perpetrator of the murders. I mean, he killed everybody, and of course, he was high on drugs at the time. I have no doubt. And now he's still in jail, and he's obviously trying to get parole, but he will never get out. Not in those circumstances. But they all obeyed Manson like he was God, although he said he was Jesus Christ.
And recently, California Governor Gavin Newsom denied parole to one of the Manson family members, right?
Yeah, what happens is Leslie Van Houten, who's a model prisoner and was only 19 at the time of the murders, was given parole by the parole board. But, and this is the but, each time a governor in California, Arnold Schwarzenegger, the actor, Jerry Brown, the governor, and the Gavin Newsom, as you pointed out, have said, no, we deny the parole board's request for freedom. So she's still in jail, and she is still trying.
Well, listen, I just bought your book on Amazon as we were talking. I can't wait to read it. Manson exposed, a reporter's 50-year journey into madness and murder. Ivor Davis, who's covered this from 50 years ago today until right now, even threatened by the Manson family. They threaten to kill him. Amazing stuff, sir. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks for your time, Rich.
Now, the question then, of course, becomes, did we learn any lessons from all the attention we've given Charles Manson over the years? Too late to put the toothpaste back in the jar on this one. But going forward, can we learn from this and figure out maybe the idea is not to glorify these people in such a way going forward? These shooters, for example, like over the weekend.
Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.